folks. Welcome to, I guess this is Get Off My Lawn on InfoWars. I'll be filling in for the next couple hours. If you don't know who I am, my name is Gavin McInnes. I started Vice Media and the Proud Boys. I was also in the Guinness Book of World Records for most gorgeous genitalia, which I thought was weird. I didn't know that it was public, but I guess someone saw it somewhere. And I was hoping to give 110% today, but I'm a little hungover. I was with Tommy Robinson all weekend. We hosted him up at the America First Warehouse in Ronkonkoma, Long Island. He doesn't drink, but I do when I'm hosting someone. So I can only give you 100% today. Another thing that's going to bother you is I don't think AIPAC controls America. I have my problems with Israel, but I'm pretty much a Zionist. And I think this war is awesome. I don't think it's a war. I think it's shock and awe. I'm still on the Trump train, possibly more than ever. I can see the steam coming out of your ears right now. But if you're watching InfoWars all day, don't you want some variety of opinions? Isn't that more interesting? So I love Harrison Smith, funny guy. We got kicked out of CPAC together because some Antifa kid was threatening me. So I grabbed him and I told him I'm going to end him. And then he screamed for security, this little tough anarchist. So they kicked us out. And then Harrison got caught up in it somehow. And then we said, we're starting our own CPAC and there's going to be hookers there and cocaine, which is not true. We were not starting a prostitute and drug infested CPAC. But then we left and went and had some fun. So that's when I first met him. But yeah, he doesn't sound like he's a big fan of this war. I was just watching it with you guys. But this is where we're at right now. Front page of the New York Post, the world's oldest still running daily newspaper, Hormuz Strait Jacket. Trump's blockade on Iran begins today. I think it's awesome. It's like the movie where the mobster, the bikers come in and they go, we'd like it if you would leave. They were actual Hell's Angels. No, they were wearing Hell's Angels colors from real coats. And after that, the Hell's Angels said, no more Hell's Angels logos. We can't have ourselves being beaten up by mobsters. It's bad for the brand. But anyway, what happens? The bikers won't leave. And then he just closes the door and he goes, now yous can't leave. Which I think we all remember is one of the greatest moments in movie history. They're not wearing Hell's Angels gear. They're wrong.
Now you just can't leave.
I think they were Hell's Angels, but they couldn't wear it in the film.
Oh,
right?
That's it. Yeah. I'm already starting up the show with false information and fake news. But we all remember that as the greatest movie moment of all time. Look how bad the editing is.
Oh, yeah.
Show that again. Like, you should show
all
that.
All their courage and strength was drained right from their bodies. They had a reputation for breaking up bars. But they knew that instant
no,
they
no.
made a fatal
Go back,
bar.
Dumbass.
Now you just can't leave.
Look at that.
I will never forget the look on their face.
Cool.
Now you just can't leave.
Yeah.
Hey, editor. You show his face 1/1000, 2/1000, and then he breaks the silence with now you just can't leave. We don't even see the n of now. We're too busy cutting in on him. Anyway, we've got all kinds of very important news. What's this first segment? 5 minutes?
It's not showing the normal countdown on here.
Okay, well, we'll just be at the mercy of the producers down there in Texas. Sabrina Carpenter, she's one of these chicks where I bet with no makeup she goes down from an 8 to maybe a 4. Is that her name?
Yeah, that's her name.
Sabrina Carpenter. Really? It reminds me of when I would date teenagers when I was a teenager. Don't worry, I'm not a perv. But when I was a kid in the 80s, girls would cake it on.
I've been an OFO for as long as I've been an Info Warrior, 18 years. and Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives, like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows if there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the Ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or something for like $40. We'll be right back.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Before I was so rudely interrupted by my mentor, Alex Jones, I was talking about Sabrina Carpenter and the girls I would date. We've all dated, if you're a Gen X, in the 80s, we'd cake it on and you'd go home with some girl. That was back when I was 16 in 1986. You'd make out with a girl for like 6 hours, hoping to get a taste of something more than second base. And during that, their makeup would wear off. So you'd have red lipstick all over your face here. And you'd have tendonitis from trying to get into their skin-tight jeans. It was hell.
The 50s sounds like a weird time.
I bet the 50s was better. I don't know why. You know, we assume girls get looser and looser as time goes by. That's possibly not true. When I was a teenager, we were all petrified of AIDS. We're middle-class Canadians in Kanata, Ontario. No one's seen or heard of heroin or gays in 1,000 miles. And we're like, great. My teacher said that if you're with one partner, you're with all their partners, and it's exponential. So I've had sex with thousands of people. I'm going to die. We were all positive we were going to die. So it wasn't exactly falling from the trees back then. Anyway, Sabrina reminds me of those girls. And she was at a show this weekend doing her show. And some Arabs who are taking over. This is probably why I'm much more pro-war than the rest of you guys is. I'm an Islamophobe. And I see the Arab world going up, number of Muslims going up, number of Christians going down. We were like this. We're going to be like this. What was it? 2/3 of the world was Christian or something, and 1/3 was Muslim. And that's going to reverse in a decade or so. Anyway, they start doing the Zagruta. And she doesn't know what it is. And she just goes with her instincts, which is, that's annoying.
I think I heard someone yodel. Is that what you're doing? I don't like it.
It's my culture. It's my
culture. That's your culture, is yodeling? Is this Burning Man? What's going on? This is weird.
Yeah, you accidentally revealed yourself as a xenophobe. Welcome to the club, Sabrina. Isn't it awesome? You are correct. That is a very annoying call. It's very primitive, too. It's like we probably did it as cave people or something to ward off evil spirits, and then we grew up and invented music. But here, go to 12. You can see some Arabs talking about it. So Sabrina has, of course, since apologized. I didn't know that it was a cultural thing. Now I like it. I was going with my ear holes and not what I'm told by my masters.
What is your favorite Egyptian wedding tradition?
Zagruta?
We did together. She just got...
I don't like it.
Oh, sorry, guys. Sorry. Yeah, they're doing a
like
podcast
that.
Of that. So what is...
Here's what I've lived all over the world. China, I was born in England. My parents are Scottish. We used to go back there every year. Taiwan, Singapore, Australia. And I've been all over Europe. I've been all over the place. And I can say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the West is the best. That was the sort of the caveat for the Proud Boys. That was what started it all. And it's okay to admit that. It's okay to admit that that sounds annoying. You know what else I find annoying? The haka. Oh. It may have been a fun thing for kids in the 60s or something to do. Initially, it's a Maori war dance. But now it means F you. It's this. And doing it in Parliament, if you go find earlier examples of it, my old buddy Ryan Rivera brought this up. They were much more sort of cool. It's gotten really like, yeah. It used to be more like, hey. If this ever happened to me at my job and I worked in, I just walk out. I'm not going to sit here and be stomped at. And in sports, they do it as sports teams and the other team just stands and stares at them. Turn your back to them. This is a very primitive and ridiculous, silly dance.
If 6 votes opposed.
Right. And that chin tattoo, it looks like you were eating soup without a napkin. You get to wear just a t-shirt and sneakers. Alright, that's enough. Isn't that rude?
I don't like it.
By the way, go to 1-4. The Maoris, they like to pretend that they had their land stolen from them by the evil Brits. No, they massacred the Brits. They had these, their weapons were like haka fatigue. Their weapons looked like girls' field hockey sticks. They were sharp wood. And they would hide in the sand. So you just saw mounds of sand. The British come up and they go, well, this is a lumpy beach. And then they would come out and decapitate the Brits. So eventually the Brits just said, okay, can we negotiate something where you get land and we get land? I'm done fighting you. You're too savage. And the reason that they lived in New Zealand is because they had taken over from the indigenous people there. The Maori are colonizers.
See that clip from New Zealand Parliament of the haka temper tantrum? What I find funny is so many are quick to jump and say that New Zealand has to respect the Maori because they're the
Maori
natives, and the New Zealanders are these evil white colonizers. But it begs the question, are they the natives? They were the first there, and therefore they're the indigenous, right? Except you would be wrong, because before the Maori got there, there was a group called the Moriori, a small, literally pacifistic Polynesian tribe. For people who love to cry about how evil the British colonizers were, we can only imagine that when the Maori arrived and met the Moriori, they probably came with open arms and gifts. Except no, in the 1800s, they started the Moriori War and slaughtered nearly all of them. There's not even a thousand of them.
That's a bad habit, by the way, to be going like this with your microphone. It makes almost every letter pop out. Chill. You're at a recording studio, literally. If you would like more proof that the Turd World sucks, let's check in on their video games. Some of their more popular video games involve having to go get the pieces after each turn because they've gone flying away. Look at this culture. No roads. Some giant chimney for some reason. Okay, try to deke out the rubber rings. Okay, now we gotta go get those rings. We launched them in outer space. Meanwhile, these guys are like 50 years old. Can we just start recolonizing again? Like everyone says, I was talking about this last week, everyone says the proof that the Jews are evil is they... Oh, that was a good one. I'm getting suckered into it. They've been kicked out of 109 countries. What about Britain? Iran, they've been kicked out of 90 countries. No, they chose to leave. Okay. Another piece of red left my atlas today. But places like Jamaica, have you seen Jamaica in 1960 before the revolution when they kicked the English out or voluntarily left or whatever you want to call it? It was stunning. Although you could say the same of Detroit, St. Louis, Baltimore. When you see pictures that say 1910 of basically anywhere, anywhere, it looks beautiful. You know what that is today? Dirt, cinder blocks, rebar, a Rastaman with one rubber boot on, one sandal, a little kid's sweater on top of a long sleeve shirt, some tartan pants, and a kid's beach shovel stuck in his hair. And he's stabbing you. I think everyone was better off. So, yeah, Sabrina apologized, and she will never do that again. Justin Bieber, also in important breaking news, he played Coachella this week for $10 million. Everyone says it's a groundbreaking price. Genesis' last concert was like $230 million.
They meant just for Coachella.
Okay. Yeah. $10 million, I got that on me.
Me too.
I offered to pay the Sandy Hook bill for Alex, and he said, don't worry about it, I got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. But this might be the worst concert I've ever seen. And I saw the Replacements get so drunk they fell off stage. He's got a monitor playing YouTube videos of himself with a bunch of gymnasts flipping at a beach party. And then you can see him dancing to his own music. He's not even singing. So then he gets bored of that and he stops the song and plays another song. Yes?
I have some insight into why that happened.
He's become addicted to, wait, let me guess the drug. Ketamine.
Maybe. But he sold his music catalog. So you have to pay to perform your own songs. So he only did like ones that were not on his catalog, like B-sides that are.
Well, he did a medley of all his greatest hits.
Then I guess I heard.
Maybe something. Medleys. Maybe if you don't play the whole song, it's null and void. Maybe. But I thought when a musician sells his publishing, he can't get any of the record money.
You don't. Yeah.
But you get all your live shows, I thought.
I don't know. Yeah.
Like the Beastie Boys, they didn't get anything from the first album. That all went into Rick Rubin's pocket. Yeah. Rick Rubin is the most overrated douche, the ruiner of bands. What's his other claim to fame? I told Johnny Cash to do a bunch of covers. Okay. Johnny Cash did a good version of a Nine Inch Nails song. Okay. And then Alien Ant Farm or that. What are they called again?
System of a Down.
System of a Down? What? Like cheesy prog rock metalcore? He's a genius. Most creative man in the world. Yeah, okay. What's 1-8?
That is more Bieber. Bieber fever. We got
it. Let's see
there.
It again. Now, I know you're saying, dude, I'm 60 years old. Why are you showing me Justin Bieber? Because these are our children. This is what our children listen to. Sabrina is much more influential than anyone on this network, especially me. So they move mountains, these people, and then they become our politicians, our bosses. They're the ones who send us to an old folks home. You can ignore the youth at your own peril. This is the culture.
Wow, he's Googling it.
He's Googling his songs. For $10 million. Hey, can you come on stage and Google yourself? Can you YouTube yourself for $10 million?
Okay. Yeah.
Can you tell a funny anecdote about that? Hey. Yeah, and I looked up that Genesis concert that was $230 million. God, I bet there, I'm a cheap person. I'm Scottish. But I bet there was so much waste. Look how bad this is. Oh, my God. All right, that's enough of that.
Wow.
You know what, Sean? I'm going to go off script here.
Okay.
How much more time do we have?
Probably about 9 minutes right now.
I want to get into Trump and Ireland. and the justice crisis we're in, but we've got some time here. And after, I think Harrison was pretty heavy, so let's keep it light. Why don't we introduce this segment to a new audience? It's called Celebrities
Okay.
Telling Mundane Stories. Now, that also sounds irrelevant, but it is relevant. We live in a celebrity culture here in America. We mock Brits for their monarchy. Jay-Z and Beyonce are our monarchs. They live in the most expensive piece of real estate ever sold in California. We worship them, not me, not you. They do. Go criticize Beyonce and see what happens to your feed. It's a lot less severe if you criticize King Charles. So the evidence of that is we get a celebrity in front of a microphone, and then he tells us that he met Frank Sinatra once and got his drink order wrong. And we as Americans are so happy that we're hearing a celebrity talk about a celebrity. No one questions the actual story. And as someone who doesn't really, I'm not really particularly interested in film stars. I took this punk band on a tour. Crass was the band. And they're old now. They were big when I was in the early 80s. And G. Vauchet did all their graphics. And she was visiting New York, so I took her on a tour. And this is the same kind of thing. So we're on the horse and carriage tour of Central Park. And the guy was like, yeah, that's where Diana Ross used to stay. And over here, you know, you heard of the guy from Golden Girls, B. Arthur. She used to live in that apartment. And he's telling us about all these celebrities. And nothing really but the history of New York and Central Park. All this celebrity lived there. And when we were done, he goes, what'd you think? Was that all right? And I go, yeah. And then G says to him, I'm not particularly interested in film stars. And that hurt his feelings. So if you're not particularly interested in film stars, oh. There's G getting up. Welcome. I should have been looking for the document while you were doing that. I don't think I've seen that before.
Yeah, we've only played that once, I think.
I was so excited. All right, this is a pretty esoteric segment that we do. It's a love it or hate it. Some people, it's sort of like we do another thing called woman porn, which isn't exactly what it sounds like. It's not Playgirl. It is these stupid TV shows where like a black surgeon is saving a man who's a criminal and the police go, give us his blood. And they go, not without a warrant. And then the police arrest the black surgeon because he makes sure that his patient's rights are maintained. That's not a thing. But it is in TV land. Okay. This one is so bad, it's good. Conan O'Brien is talking to Arsenio Hall about how he met him once. And what's amazing about this story is he skips over fascinating things that they both have insider baseball on, like Johnny Carson was viciously, furiously, passionately jealous about everyone who was close to him, especially Joan Rivers. And he X'd her for appearing on another talk show without asking his permission, just appearing. And then she was blackballed from The Tonight Show, and her manager, which was her husband, killed himself. That's an interesting story. The David Letterman wars with Jay Leno, that was interesting. They made a whole movie about that, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Had to give some guy a prosthetic chin. No, not getting into that. I'm just going to say I met you once and you were nice. Spoiler alert, I just gave away the ending.
Joan Rivers is a frequent guest on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. She gets offered her own show. She does it. Causes a major feud with Carson because he does not like that. She's on Fox. She does a show. It implodes. It doesn't work.
The Beastie Boys were on it.
But you had gone on that show.
Yeah, as a stand-up.
Mm-hmm. You had been successful on that show. And then when Joan leaves, they need someone to kind of, this thing's still on.
Yeah, they got 11 weeks with just a set.
Yeah.
And Joan leaves. She's not coming back. I think Edgar, her husband, killed himself.
He did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, like, pause.
That ship is safe.
What? You know what it is? Celebrities get their asses kissed so much that they could talk about paint drying and everyone is just, and they've gotten soft. They're storytelling obese. They're out of shape, flabby. Why did Joan Rivers leave? What was the catalyst that set her out of the studio? Why did the husband kill himself? Hello?
Killed. And they went through a lot of guys letting them have the show for one night. From Wally Cox to Malcolm Jamal Warner to Suzanne Summers. Because I remember Suzanne Summers did very good. And in the end, they were choosing between me and Suzanne Summers.
So you
That's
come
mildly
on,
interesting.
They more or less say,
why'd they choose
hey, Arsenio,
you?
You're really good at this. Why don't you just, this show is ending, but why don't you take over till it ends? Now, here's the thing you don't know.
Oh, my God.
That show ends, and there's kind of a feeling like, wow, that Arsenio guy did really well. He's going to come back, okay? And here's the thing you don't know. There's a replacement show after Joan's show.
Wilton North.
The Wilton North.
I do know this now.
Okay, so the Wilton North report gets
How did
announced.
You know he doesn't know that?
He's going to put on a show. There's no host for it yet, but they get some writers before they even have the host.
And who's the writer, Conan?
And I get this call. And my writing partner and I go in and we get offered jobs to write. We need work. We haven't worked in a bit. So mm-hmm. we say, sure, we'll do it. We don't know what this is. Who are the hosts? They say, we don't know yet. We're going to find them. And so one of the first meetings we had, you were still, I think, finishing up your show. Mm-hmm. And we were just having an early introductory meeting.
Here it comes.
I leave and I heard there's, and I go, is there anything to eat around here? And they go, yeah, there's a snack room in there. I go into the snack room.
Ready?
And I see you. And you were at the refrigerator getting something. And I said, oh, I knew who you were. I'm like, that's the guy who's been, you know, you weren't
holding down the fort.
You were holding down the fort. And I was like, oh, hey. And you were so nice to me. You were like,
drum roll.
Hey. You were very gracious. Oh, and you were like, I
am so glad this story goes like that.
No.
Excuse me, white meat.
Well, you did call me white meat, but you were very nice about it. You were like, really white meat. And I'm like, well,
white meat.
Joan Rivers.
Can we play it again?
That's the entire story. I like these. He's such a megalomaniac, too. He has to go, well, let's see where I fit into your life, Arsenio. I was a young writer and I met you and you were nice. I don't give a crap. What? And then Arsenio has to put a button on the end and go white meat just to give it something. At least he could see how bad that was. God, I hate. Why do celebrities exist? I've always said this. I'm watching a movie. I actually stole this from Justin Theroux, another celebrity. But he says, you're watching Castaway. You see Tom Hanks. You don't see a guy stranded on an island. You see Tom Hanks. You know him. Oh, his son is Chet, that white boy summer guy. So you got to really like squint to pretend that's not Tom Hanks. It's not like acting is hard. Like with the NBA, with the MLB, throwing a fastball at 102 miles an hour, that's a fraction of 1% of the population can ever hope to achieve that. So that I don't mind. Acting is easy peasy. Go check out my movie, How to Be a Man. I'm exquisite. And all you do is pretend to be a guy. It's retard maxing is what it is. You don't overthink. We had a hell of a weekend trying to retard max. If you're not familiar with retard maxing, like because you're old, I just learned about it too. It's basically don't worry, be happy.
And we got 10 seconds, so maybe you can tell us about it.
Okay, I'll tell you about retard maxing after the break. Okay? Is that acceptable? Tell me.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it, and you like it, and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into, and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigley, our sponsor, has a really high-quality, private-label, top-selling brand that we were able to private-label we're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high-quality zeolite. Please do your own research. And then go to theoliveshowstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Inner Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick.
Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bolivine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite detox formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit thealexjonesstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time, so all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs, cancel any time, $30 a month, get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything at thealexjonesstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at thealexjonesstore.com. I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier it would. I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
During the break, we learned that Sabrina, that thing we showed, was Ed Carcella. I gotta say, the stage production looked pretty cool. But I would rather pull out my own eyes. So let's. That's enough of celebrities telling mundane stories. I want to get serious for a second here and get into Trump. By the way, Sabrina apologized because that's our culture, or I think it was our culture. I think we are getting less apologetic around now, like the past 2 years. So that's kind of old news for her to apologize about not liking Arab things. But I thought this was interesting. There's a satirical school paper, which is an interesting thing because, you know, we had Harvard Lampoon brought us National Lampoon, brought us Animal House. It's a stalwart of American comedy. All the Simpsons writers were from Harvard Lampoon. I'm in Harvard Lampoon. And it's where funny people get their start. And you're also kind of at your funniest in your early 20s, right? You just moved out of your house and you're getting laid and you're interesting. It's a good time to be coming up with jokes, not so much at 55. But this paper is being eviscerated for their disgusting, horrific jokes. And of course, They're apologizing profusely. Sorry, Sean, yep. This is 1-6.
You want the video first?
Well, no, I want the tweet first. Okay. This is, what's his name, Greg Lukowitz, I think? Fire, the group that that fights for free speech. On Greg Lukianoff. I had dinner with him once. He cuts up all his food before eating it. That really bothered me. Fire is deeply troubled by UNC's decision to condemn satire. I mean, if there's one thing that is protected in the First Amendment, it's satire. And announced an investigation into protected student expression. The Daily Tar Heel. It always has names like this. Like my university, Carleton University, it was called The Charlatan, The Trickster. And we still had to bend over backwards. Like, they canceled all the comics I did. I've told this story 100 times, but one of our professors, when I was the cartoonist for The Charlatan at Carleton University in Ottawa, Ontario, and his name was Marvin Glass. He's dead now. He was the head of the Canadian Communist Party, and he was our teacher, a professor of philosophy. And he burned down his office by accident. So I did a cartoon of him. He smoked a lot, with cigarettes everywhere, and he's playing with these Bolshevik action figures and not noticing that his desk is on fire. And they go, no, you can't do that because it implicates him. I go, we're called The Charlatan. It's not the Wall Street Journal. So they go, no, just make it like cut him out of it. Okay, so I drew an ashtray with some Bolshevik soldiers. Now that it still implicates him too much. I quit after this, by the way. You know what my last drawing was? It was a cartoon of fire. Because you don't know what fire looks like. Allow me to draw it for you. So this problem, I think, I'm talking about 1990 right now. So this problem has been going on since then. And you know what's funny? I looked at, they had all their archives there, and I was looking up the 70s, and it was over the top, racist, sexist, hilarious. The editor's photo was a penis with glasses on it, an actual penis, not even like blurred or anything. That was the editor's photo. How far we've fallen. After calls from takedowns from student groups and the student body president, the paper took articles down and apologized. Hill After Hours, a separate registered student group, also posted and deleted a TikTok sketch satirizing a stereotypical white student walking through an area of campus where predominantly students of color have historically lived. Now, this is what I really hate about when they attack satire. You don't know where the satire was going. It's art. So this girl does a snobby bourgeois fake tour of the crappy part of the campus. That could be, you could argue that's mocking rich white people. Like it's a pro working class joke. So what you do when you censor someone is you imbue this motive on them that they don't have a choice, that they didn't choose this motive. It's rape. You're raping this girl because you're saying this is what you meant by that, by your art. And what does it produce? A world like that is gray. You know, people would take Alex Jones's quotes out of context and say, he said this, and he shouldn't have talked so recklessly where it could be taken out of context. If you're speaking in a way where nothing can be taken out of context and sound bad, you're not speaking in a colorful way. You're speaking in a very drab gray way. And that sucks. That's no fun. It's un-American too. That's Soviet. That's China. Anyway, go down to the video. This is what they've apologized for.
Hey guys, welcome back to my channel. Today I'm going to be taking a step outside of Granville and exploring a third world country, South Campus. Now I know what you guys are thinking. Stacy, isn't that like super dangerous? The truth is, the people here are just like us, and I'm here to prove it. I just can't wait to bask in their culture and in their struggle. The truth
is funny.
We have nothing to be afraid of. But just in case, I brought some bodyguards.
They were.
You ready?
Skinheads, that would be funny.
Pepper spray?
Check.
Taser?
Check.
Vape?
Check. Let's do this.
They're mocking classism. I hate direct jokes while they're happening, but.
I'm surprised this place has roads and buildings. I always thought it was just desert.
Missing brick, 2 o'clock.
All right.
Don't touch anything.
So you get the idea, right? They can't do that. You may not make that joke. What was the other thing in the next picture next to it? So that's the video from the separate group. And then UNC brings back DEI for whites. Now, if that was a joke that glorified black people, they would not be apologizing. But you can't make jokes for that. And again, just like the video, you could argue that is mocking white people in that. It's actually kind of a politically, both of those jokes are kind of politically correct. But the authorities are so dim and tyrannical that they just see controversy, slightly interesting take, and race, and they stop there, call you a racist, and make you apologize. I will never apologize for creating the Western world. That's what the Proud Boys say at every meetup. I'm a Western chauvinist, and I refuse to apologize for creating the modern world. Speaking of refusing to apologize, allow me to make you all incredibly angry by promoting Trump. Can you play the interstitial, please?
Sure.
Okay, let's do this. I'll try to fill the dead air with nattering and try to keep you interested while we roll the thing that is coming up any second now.
Here, my name is Trump, and this is my show, JK. It's a segment, but that's all we need to know, frankly.
You know who does a really good Trump impression?
Who's that?
Everyone. Oh. Stop. It's hack. It's like Alex Jones. Doing an Alex Jones impression is hack. I'm sure this has been covered to death today, and it'll be covered after me. I can't not talk about it. But Trump depicted himself as Jesus, 2-1. I think he's since taken it down, which is kind of an apology. He's not quite as bad. This is 2-1.
Yeah.
And the weirdest thing about it is, I think what happened is someone made fan art of him, and he just saw it as a holy figure, and he's like, cool, it's a drawing of me. My fans would probably like this. I'm going to post it. And then his team, instead of them going, Donald, you're not just a saintly figure. You're the main guy. You're the son of God. I think that's a little blasphemous. Instead of them doing that, they go, his staff sees those, I guess they're soldiers above him, and decide that's the controversial part. Everyone in the White House is incompetent. So they change them to demons because that's less controversial somehow. And there you have it. This is explained in the text above it. So the new version that the White House put out adds demons. Wait, yeah. Original photo was posted by Nick Adams, but someone in the Trump camp decided it would be wise to alter it to add a demon. Holy crap. So everyone's real mad about that. Even my wife was outraged. I'm not. I think it's funny. I don't know. Maybe it's my background is as a punk rock liberal kid. So, I mean, I am in the Knights of Columbus, and we did swear allegiance to the Pope, and we did promise never to criticize priests or the Pope. I said to my hardcore Catholic friends, what am I supposed to do when the Pope says, open the borders up? And he goes, we just say he's been misinformed. So I think this modern Pope is pretty misinformed, but here was Trump crapping on him. Pope Leo is weak on crime, terrible for foreign policy. He talks about fear of the Trump administration, doesn't mention the fear. He goes on, I mean, I won't read the whole thing. It's very famous now, but he says he was only chosen because he's American and that his attacks on me will have more power as an American. They should have hired his brother. His brother would have made a way better Pope. This Leo is weak on crime, weak on nuclear weapons, doesn't sit well with me. So, yeah. He hangs out with David Axelrod. I don't really see this as an attack on the Pope. He doesn't call the Pope a loser. Well, I guess he calls him weak. Tommy Robinson was much more. Oh, we'll get to Tommy Robinson in a second. No, let's do it in order.
Okay.
Tommy Robinson called him a pussy, but I want to use that as a segue to discuss my weekend with the man. I don't know. I think it's a good time to scare our enemies. I think Iran is at the center of a lot of terrorist funding. So is Qatar. Qatar, I guess you're supposed to pronounce it. And I hate them. And I see the death toll so far as the butcher's bill. There, I said it. Please calm down. Obviously, if it blows up and it becomes a quagmire, I'll be furious. But you feckless fair-weather friends, you've jumped off the Trump train the second the going got tiny bit rough. And now all you'll talk about is the imminent apocalypse. I guess if it bleeds, it leads, but it ain't bleeding yet. So why are you leading the charge away from Trump? I think so far everything's going great. Now you just can't leave. And he also is coming across as a nut, by the way, with this, like, what did he call them? He said, open the effing, I can't even say it on InfoWars, what he said to the world. Open the effing straight, you crazy bastards, on Easter Sunday. That was awesome.
And he said, praise Allah.
Praise Allah. And I think it's good to be seen as deranged in a time of war. No one's ever respected Trump in the rest of the world, whether it's the elites in Europe, the globalists, obviously, but the third world, you know, the United Nations types. So, okay, I'll just make you scared like I'm a psycho. You're going to run around with rubber boots and no pants on and a knife in your hand. And now when you're going to negotiate, it's kind of sketchy. Like, you're scared of him. That's as good as respect. Fear and respect, they're about the same. We'd prefer respect. That's a lot cooler. But fear will do in a pinch. What's a 2-3?
This tweet here.
This is a good little segment from GB News, Great Britain News. And he says things are going great.
Do you want the video?
Yeah, let's play the video because he really just quotes the video. It's about 2 minutes long. Okay. I don't like that caller.
The truth about this war that nobody wants to tell you. It isn't about toppling Iran's
zoom way out,
regime,
dude.
Before you ask. It's about reshaping the global world order. And I think that's happening right now. And I want to tell you how Britain is staring down the barrel of a dark age we haven't seen for over 1,000 years. This all comes, of course, as President Trump says, Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran if the key shipping lane in the Strait of Hormuz
That's last Tuesday,
is not
right?
And of course, lots of expletives there we have blurred out for you. But this is bigger than a headline or a Truth Social post in this war. And the evidence is not actually being kept from us. We're just blind to seeing it because nobody's talking about it. America has made no secret of its new doctrine. It is stepping back from being the world's police and repositioning itself as a powerful, self-reliant fortress.
That is why President Trump has drawn a new strategic map from Greenland to the Gulf of America to the Panama Canal and its surrounding countries. At the Department of War, we call this strategic map the Greater North America.
Interesting stuff, isn't it? So what does America actually gain from this war before we get on to the Greater North America? Well, let's look at a map here, shall we? I'll bring this up for you. The Strait of Hormuz, you can see there, is one of the most critical energy choke points on this planet. It is also a whopping 45% of China's oil flowing through it. That is a lot of oil that China needs. But it isn't just Iran.
Just pause for a sec. I read recently, I was talking to Tommy Robinson about this, because he's pro invading Iran too. Not full-on war, but what we're doing now. I don't even call it a war. But China has something like 100 days of oil. I don't know why. Can't they produce their own oil?
I was looking that up too, and it turns out that's kind of normal, but I guess since they're in such a choke point, that's a big deal.
Right. Well, our gas prices are high. I want Venezuela's oil. I want Iran's oil. And I want them to be crippled, and I don't want China. We're negotiating tariffs with China right now, so I'd like to see them sweat.
Cast your minds back to January this year, where Trump effectively has now captured Venezuela and declared its oil is under their control. And if you have a look at this graph, who there in the red relies heavily on that oil? Well, it looks like China to me. Now consider the impeccable timing of all of this since January. America is right in the middle of a tariff and trade negotiation with the very stubborn and very powerful, might I add, Chinese government, who are not budging on Donald Trump's arrangements here. Well, look who's got the upper hand all of a sudden. It's America. They are now controlling the vast swathes of oil that China needs. That puts them in a very strong position going forward on these tariff agreements. And Europe is also getting hit hard a lot with this. with Russian energy totally off the table and domestic energy security weakened by this leftist obsession with net zero, Europe is becoming increasingly dependent on external oil supply and energy supply. And that puts America, again, in a very strong position because we will soon be wholly dependent on American supplies of oil and gas. They will dictate terms and use energy as leverage, not just economically, but geopolitically too. And what do we know that they really want? Greenland. They want Greenland. They've made that very clear, and they didn't get it yet. So the longer this war drags on, the more dependent...
We get it. We're sitting here watching someone else do my show.
Did you notice the spelling error in the bottom subtitle?
No. Okay, I can't really read that.
Repoing the Strait of Hormuz instead of Rio.
Ooh, jeez. Come on, guys. That's embarrassing. So it's kind of 4D chess. You know, I did a video this week. It went super viral. It's my most successful tweet. I think got 1 million views. But I said that, you know, there's nuance with Judaism. There's secular Karens who attack me and my family regularly. I hate them. And then I have my Orthodox Jewish friends who, you know, we fight the government together. And Ron Coleman, Ezra Levant, John Gross. So I started out with that. And then I said, this is totally different than any other of the wars. This is not Afghanistan. It's not a quagmire like Iraq. This is not somewhere we're going to be stuck for a long time. I wouldn't be surprised if we're out of there in a week. I can feel the rage at the other end of the screen. I'm glad we're separated by by thousands of miles. Are you? If you punch the screen, you're only going to hurt your TV. Don't do it. Just send me scathing tweets and talk about how they must have something on me. Tucker is at the other end of the spectrum when it comes to discussing Trump's actions. He's not into 4D chess. He thinks Trump might be the Antichrist.
And you have to think through, like, could there be a spiritual component to what we're watching? Is it just a conventional escalation ladder in a badly thought out war with ill-defined goals? And we just wound up in this really tough place where we face either humiliation on the one side or a nuclear launch on the other. That's part of what it is. But could it be something bigger than that? Is it possible that what you're watching is a very stealthy yet incredibly effective attack on what, from a Christian perspective, is the true faith, belief in Jesus? Is that what really is under attack?
All right,
that's
Tucker's idea. I think it's funny when people talk about hell and the Antichrist because I live in New York City. Well, I work in New York City. And if you want to go to hell, if you want to see what hell is like, you should have been with me and Tommy walking around the city on Sunday, trying to get to the Circle Line. We watched Luton Football Club play the cup final. That was 10 a.m. New York City time. But you just check in on New York once in a while if you want to see what hell is. Here's 2-5 is a good example. Someone's in Times Square.
Check this out. We got free all prisoners, murder all authority, love all immigrants.
Love it. Where are you from?
Where am I from? I'm from hell. The devil in the flesh, yo.
Okay. Well, I guess, how would you compare Times Square to hell?
how would I prepare it? Yeah. I don't know. To live is to sin. Sinning is a good thing, you know? That's all it comes down to, if there's people in heaven and like none of them have said fuck,
Sorry about that language there, folks. Wow. So Trump criticized the Pope. He might be the Antichrist, according to many. And Tommy Robinson, my buddy Tommy, that we did a show with this weekend. I did a sit-down sort of Q&A, kind of like inside the actor's studio, and just asked him about his crazy life. I hope it went well. He's a real chatterbox, so you can ask him one question and not get to the next one for 40 minutes. But when someone's life is that interesting, he's seen now the hip thing is to call him a Zionist shill and a Mossad agent. His Jewish interests are pretty much nothing. I mean, it's basically how we feel about the Amish. Like, oh, they're cool. Comes across your radar once in a while. but he's not really into, I mean, he's been to Israel. He's been all over the world. He's been to the UAE recently. But he called the Pope a pussy. God does not bless any conflict. Anyone who is a disciple of Christ, the Prince of Peace, is never on the side of those who once wielded the sword and today drop bombs. Military action will not create space for freedom in times of peace, which comes only from the patient promotion of coexistence and dialogue among peoples. Pussy! One funny thing I liked about the show, this, lecture podcast this weekend was I got into his soccer hooliganism. Luton Football Club, where he's from, it's north of London, maybe about 30, 40 minutes, and they're not a particularly successful football team. They get mad when you say soccer, but they're known as the most violent one, next to maybe Tottenham, and he was absolutely unapologetic about it. I talked about, you know, prospects and how you recruit people in the team, and when you go to fight, there's this whole sort of Roman phalanx where they flank their enemies on both sides, and he's like, yeah, it was awesome. I wish I could still do it today. I don't apologize for that. That seems to be a running theme today. He goes, it was really, really fun. And I realized it's a sport. Soccer hooliganism is a sport. It's mutual combat. There's no knives. There's no like hurting people's families. It's at a pre-arranged location. And they go there and beat the crap out of each other. There's even a mutual respect kind of thing. Like at one point he told me he was getting arrested at the airport and he could tell something was going to go down. So he saw someone from a rival football club and said, oi, if I get arrested, can you make sure my wife and kids go home okay? He's like, no problem, Tommy, no problem. Like the way a boxer would talk to another boxer. So that was a wake-up call. I think they care more about the violence than the game. When I was with Tommy at a Luton game, we spent more time down at the pub spending £3 per beer than going up into the stands and watching the game. They have sort of these labyrinth of tunnels underneath the game, and that's where you go and get your pints, whereas stadiums go up high. So, yeah, Tommy's having a big thing on May 16th. I don't know. I went to the one on September 13th of last year. There was about 3 million people there, and you know what was so cool about it? Charlie Kirk had just died that week. They play the national anthem. There's a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk. There was Charlie Kirk flags everywhere. And this is in London. That Friday night, the night before the rally, there was a huge vigil with hundreds of people. And he just died.
You got 5 seconds.
It was beautiful. So when we come back, we'll discuss May 16th. And
here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.